when Vice President Harris said Donald Trump was fired by 83 million people last year, and he is apparently having a difficult time processing that. And I was at a watch party with some friends and their young adult children. And one of the young adult children, like age 18, goes, "Wow, that was a really compassionate mom moment." Like, and I had to laugh. So I was like, that's exactly what it was. I mean, he's just, you know, he's having a difficult time processing that. We need to help him along a little bit, maybe.
Welcome to What in God's Name. She is S1 Project co-founder Shayna Appel.
And he is the other project co-founder, Chris Owen.
How did you like that I just tossed in co-founder in there?
I know, you're just, you know, it's the beginning of a new season and you're just trying to throw me off my game. But baby, last night I watched a debate and I watched Mama Kamala lay it out, and I will not be swayed. I will not be thrown off my game, so bring it.
All right, all right. We're going to get there, Shayna. We're going to get there. But before we get there, our mission at the S1 Project is to foreground moral and theological reflection in conversations about our shared common life. Why do we do that, Shayna?
In order to move the conversation in the public square past the binaries of politics and economics, which so often bind up and limit our conversation and thus our view, making it difficult for us to get to that really holy ground of human flourishing.
I have to tell you, it's so good to be back in this space and with you, and to, I feel like we're participating in a liturgy. I mean, you know, you and I are trained to be worship leaders, and there's just something that feels good.
Start of the church year.
About.
Start of the podcast year.
Something that feels good about that.
Yes. Something known and known and understood. And yeah, there's a rhythm to it.
There's
right?
a rhythm. And also it develops and it changes over time. There's
that
a
it does.
Change within continuity.
Absolutely.
Here we go. So we have a spinny wheel. Those of you who have been with us for a while know about our spinny wheel. It is a spinny wheel. It's like Wheel of Fortune. We give it a spin. Did you want to say something, Shayna?
It is a Swamp Yankee creation of my podcast partner, Chris Owen here, who managed to tack a bicycle wheel and a sprinkler head onto a board. And the board has got a bunch of topics on it that are sort of central themes that we come back to over and over. It places things that ground us. We spin the wheel at the beginning of the show. I maintain in order to sort of loosen up because we don't come into the show with a script.
That is correct. And may I suggest, in a spirit of graciousness, that you lead us off with
the
spin
year.
For the year. The spinny wheel has landed on politics is downstream of culture. It is, of course, a perfect time for us to talk about this. Do you want to go first? Or do you want me to?
Yeah, why don't you take it?
Yeah, so politics is downstream of culture is a phrase from Andrew Breitbart, but it's an observation that other people kind of intuit and articulate to some degree. It's an idea that politics, the way we practice politics, is derivative of culture, and by culture, we mean here at the S1 Project, the habits of mind and patterns of behavior that shape forms of life. So politics is downstream of culture. A corollary of that is if you want to change your politics, then you need to change the culture first. Now, you know, this is a debatable core idea of ours because, I mean, to complicate that perspective, I think it could be argued that certain political practices then shape the culture, right? So there, it's not like it's cause and effect linear. There's a complicated interplay between our political life and our cultural life. But we really want to foreground, and I think I want to emphasize and continue to emphasize that there are matters of the heart, the patterns of behavior, the culture that we live in, that really gives rise to political life.
So, and in listening to you, I agree with everything you just said. And I guess I'm sitting here wondering if, because I think I want political leaders who lead.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure that I want political leaders who are led by culture. On the other hand, if we, the people, are responsible for culture, and albeit right now it's in a pretty toxic place, but in better times, would that have instilled in our politicians a sort of a higher sense of calling? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a good question to get us rolling on.
It is. Perfect. Perfect, perfect, perfect.
That tone indicates that we are moving from the topic of the spinny wheel to our topic of today.
So, for our program fall, we have decided to talk about politics and talk about the presidential election. And I giggle when I say that because for a couple of reasons. One is, well, I'll just say one reason. It's not our usual way. And so I did want to, Shana, take a moment to set that up for our listening community, how indeed we got to this. And basically, I sent Shana a text a little bit ago, and I said, you may think I've become someone other than myself, but I would like to propose making the election our focus this fall. You can be your political junkie self, is what I said to Shana. So just to the
no,
side.
No, I own it. I own it. Let's just, I'm not going to debate the context.
So part of my interest in doing this fall with Shana on our podcast, What in God's Name, is to unleash Shana. I don't want to restrain her. Part of what we do at the S1 Project is try to put politics into the background and bring into the foreground the moral and the theological. And we're not going to give up that basic stance. So we are going to talk about the presidential election. But as I went on to say to Shana in this text suggesting this topic, I said, you can be your political junkie self if you like, and I'll try to problematize the political lens. And maybe I went on to say, maybe I will surprise you with a political take, and you can try to thicken it with a moral or a theological response.
Slap.
And I said, what do you think? And Shana writes, you are so on, ! So that's what we're up to. We are going to talk about the election, but we're going to talk about it in a way that you won't get most every other place. Like, I do some listening around on people who try to talk about religion and theology and moral thinking and politics. And generally, they don't bring the two together. It's either talking about religion or it's talking about politics. And we want to try to bring and continue to bring together those things in a unique way. So, Shana, we're going to unleash you into your into your political takes, and I'm going to try to problematizing that political lens, bringing a richer, thicker kind of questioning to political reflection. But let's start with, since it is the day after the debate, and Shana and I agreed that we were going to jump in, and I had to tell Shana when she walked in this morning to hold her water. I didn't want her to be telling me what she thought about the debate until we got the mic going and the recording going. And so, Shana, here's your chance. I would love to hear how you reacted to last night.
Well, thanks, Chris. Let me go back to something that you said about listening to what's happening in the politosphere. I, as a political junkie, do a lot of listening and a lot of flipping between channels. And what I've noticed, for the most part, and with very few exceptions, there are those voices that have been given authority, have been granted authority, assumed to be the authorities. And they will come out and say, and this is true on all ends of the, all spots along the continuum, and they will speak truth, and I'm putting that in quotation marks, yeah. and then everyone else will pick up on it. So if you've been listening at all to the news stations, the vast majority of which this morning are reporting that Kamala Harris won the debate, that she baited Trump, that he took the bait, and the substance on both sides was not as deep as it could have been. Certainly, Vice President Harris put out a whole lot more content on her side. The specifics, the how-tos, I don't think ever really come out in a debate, but there were areas where she was asked specific questions and kind of went into more overarching themes as opposed to down into the substance. Donald Trump was Donald Trump. He was exactly who we expected him to be. He was completely unhinged, talking about immigrants eating pets. And I don't even know, like, you know, just looking at him, just, you know, just the visual contrast between the two. I'll tell you, the line for me that wrapped it up was when Vice President Harris said, Donald Trump was fired by 83 million people last year, and he is apparently having a difficult time processing that. And I was at a watch party with some friends and their young adult children, and one of the young adult children, like age 18, goes, wow, that was a really compassionate mom moment. Like, and I had to laugh. So I was like, that's exactly what it was. I mean, he's just, you know, he's having a difficult time processing that. We need to help him along a little bit, maybe. He's having a hard time processing a whole lot. And there's a part of me that wants to pull off the gloves and just, you know, go at the fact that this man is unhinged. Not speaking in complete sentences, unable to put his closing statement was a thrashing of the Biden-Harris administration. Never got to, you know, what they would do. But that's his whole platform.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's sort of what happened on the ground. Now, when we go up into the stands, we get a broader view of what was taking place on the court. This is not shocking, I know. There is a cultural, there is a gender, there is a race, there is a divide in this country, and increasingly, those standing with Donald Trump are angry white men. I can't think of another Democratic candidate that has ever received as much Republican support. To have a former Republican vice president, I never thought I'd have a nice thing to say about Darth Vader either, but, you know, here we are. And getting beyond what happens on the court, there's this area of integrity and depth of character. And while I don't think most Americans would articulate it that way, maybe some would, but that seems to be increasingly the divide. That is the subject matter we talk about here often.
I was making notes, as you may have noticed, while you were talking, and I noted several, what I would call, they're not explicitly theological themes or questions that arise.
Oh, don't look so surprised that I would have that what I'm speaking might be grounded in theology, therefore echoing. I mean, just because I'm a what kind of either or binary thinking is that, Christopher? My God.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make it sound that way.
Oh, my God. She came up with a theory. Okay. Well, so what did you hear?
Right, right.
What did you hear?
Yeah, yeah. So you talked about the media outlets. I think the right on observation that a certain thing, a certain take, a certain perspective, a certain opinion gets put out there and it's taken as the authoritative truth. And so just very broadly and generally, authority and who has authority is a theological question. I'll name two other theological themes that came up for me while you were talking, while you were giving the political analysis. Fear. Like, that is the biggest thing I came away with, especially you mentioned those closing arguments. what he brings is nothing but fear mongering. And fear, man, what a deeply rich theological topic. And again, if you don't speak theology, ease, a psycho-spiritual topic, how we handle fear, how fear works in the wider social body.
I would refer our listeners back to the program we did on fascism because, you know, there is no fascist philosophy, but there are themes that fascist regimes use. And the primary one is creating an us and them. They're doing that beautifully with immigrants, which is ironic because immigrants are us. I mean, it's a core value of America.
Yeah. And I'll just name one last little theological topic that arose for me when you were talking, which is I'll lump them together, but humiliation and resentment. I mean, you quoted Kamala talking about the 85 million people who fired him and the comment. I loved the comment.
He's having a difficult time processing that.
I mean, that's
it sounds like a mother in a principal's office. Yeah. It's been called in because the kid acted out in school. It's like, well, you know, this is a new school for him. We've just moved across the country to this new community, and he's having a hard time processing that.
Connected to humiliation would be resentment, which is the word that came to mind when you were talking about this increasing divide and the supporters of Trump being the white, angry men.
It helps us, because for the longest time, I've just been sort of walking around scratching my head saying, you know, but I know people who are Republicans and who are voting for Donald Trump. And I just don't get it. I mean, they will say things like, well, the economy was so much better under Donald Trump. Right, because Donald Trump inherited the Obama economy. We do currently have one of the strongest economies in the world. Unemployment is at historic lows. The stock market is at historic highs. Any vacation is riddled with reports of, we've got record numbers of people who are traveling. And, you know, is it bad on the ground? Yeah, it's hard on the ground. And I know I feel that personally every day. I'm retired. I'm living on a fixed income. And, you know, the costs of things are not fixed. I have a knee that needs to be replaced. I'm waiting for Medicare to kick in because I can't afford to throw my maximum deduction of $7,000 out the window. Those are my property taxes. So I understand the burdens and the balancing act that too many people are engaged in, and it is going to take us time to dig out of that. But I scratch my head at, you know, I haven't been able to understand how do people like. How does anybody follow this guy? He is a whack job. He is an angry, bitter, resentful. Normally I wouldn't never say something like this. I really believe he's a horrible human being. I really do. There has been some reporting lately about the struggles that men in our culture are going through right now. They are underperforming in college. They are underperforming in the workplace. Still, if you look at salaries, interestingly enough, women have lost ground in the last couple of years, more so than in the years preceding. So the wage gap between men and women still favors men heavily, but they're not attending college at nearly the same rates that women are. We look at mass shootings across our country. They are almost all, 99.9% of them, are carried out by men. Clearly, men are in a crisis. So now we get to the theological substance if we want to beat Donald Trump, but more importantly, if we want to be successful in remediating the kind of visceral hatred and animosity that has helped create him, we're going to have to dig a little deeper and try to figure out what's going on, what's going on with all these people.
So that's a connection back to the spinny wheel, which is our politics is downstream of culture. But let me back up a second. You're trained in systems thinking and family systems therapy, aren't you?
Yes.
So what does that lens help you see about what does your family systems thinking lens help you see about the dynamic that you're just talking about? Or does it? Maybe it doesn't. And I'll just tell you why it helps me.
No, it absolutely, I mean, I am fundamentally a system. Thanks for lifting that up because I do it without thinking about it. Mm-hmm. But it is absolutely systems thinking in terms of where our culture is and the kinds of changes that are going on. And I think we're all aware of monumental changes. You and I are recording on the anniversary of 9/11. Talk about monumental cultural change. But, you know, looking in the area of gender equality, looking at issues of, you know, where the LGBTQ plus community has come in the last 15, 20 years, there's a lot of change. And smarter people than me have said this, that, you know, when there's a lot of change and it happens quickly, there's going to be blowback.
It's the emotional element.
Yes.
So, you know, when you were talking about the economy, you were talking in very rational, logical terms that make sense. What we're witnessing is
an emotional response.
Is deeply emotional. And therefore, you need a different kind of lens to see it, I think. And so that's why I was just trying to lift that up.
Well, yes, it is emotional. And the Trump camp is really good at stoking the flames of that.
Yes.
It is about immigrants, us
yep.
and them.
Yep.
It is about that the Harris campaign and the Democrats are a bunch of Marxists. It's, you know, about the fact that like homeostasis is in nature, right? All things seek homeostasis. So we've been really out of balance since certainly the founding of this nation and well before. Now we're starting to come into some sort of equilibrium. And that absolutely means that those who were in absolute power and absolute authority and weren't questioned in the way they said it was, have absolutely got to wrap their heads around some new information. And not representing that class of people, I can't say that I know what that would feel like. But as someone who lives in multiple marginalized communities, right? You know, seeing my folks come forward and take center stage has been good and healthy, and it makes me happy to see that. I can be compassionate, though. I mean, and I think that's where it's all going to, that's what it's going to turn on, is whether or not we're able to be compassionate with one another and understand that the emotions of those who would vote other than we would are being manipulated. Can we support them without just kicking them to the curb
yeah.
or throwing more gas on that fire?
Yeah, I don't want to condone certain kinds of behavior or certain ways of thinking that are hateful and ugly. And
but I don't
as
want-
we've seen, can morph into violence, right? I'm not in pointing this out, I'm not trying to make excuses. I'm trying to help us see, again, a little more deeply into the political realm. And I just want to, I'm going to take it even a little bit further. I mean, there's this, you know, some people talk about status anxiety. You know, you're fearful of your place in the let's just say, hierarchy of society, or even getting out of hierarchical language, just talking about belonging. Do I feel a sense of belonging, which is one of the deepest needs of human beings? So if that's the kind of anxiety, and I think it is, I think that's on the right track, that's the kind of emotionality at work in our culture that's driving the politics, I think it's even more than that, which, you know, some people talk about, now this gets really tricky. Some people talk about that if Comrade Kamala were elected, it's the end of America. And I think that reflects this kind of anxiety, what, you know, the fancy philosophical term, existential anxiety, like we will no longer exist as a people. The tricky, very paradoxical thing about this is that they're projecting. Where's the truth?
Again, who has the authority? Because last night in the debate, she went on a riff about all the people who work for him. People who were in his administration who said he's a threat. Now, I mean, again, authority is always a dicey thing, and who do you turn to? But I just want to suggest, like, a possibility that it's not completely out there to say people who worked, military generals and people who worked, you know, in the cabinet for Homeland Security have declared this guy to be a threat. On the other side, let me ask you, who's saying that Kamala Harris is a threat? The talking heads at Fox News? Is that really a comparison? Are we really, I mean, you know, where are you getting your facts from? You know, the guy who wants to be president of the United States, the next president of the United States, was in a debate last night putting up false claims. And David Muir said, no, I called the city manager. There are no credible reports of immigrants stealing and eating pets. And he doubled down. Well, I saw somebody talking about it on TV. Whoa. Oh, well, if somebody said it on TV, then, whoa, why didn't you say so? We all would have just yielded. Maybe Kamala would have just, you know, taken her handbag and gone home and said, you know, Donald Trump saw it on TV. And so therefore, come on.
Yeah. I mean, to me, that's just another example of the emotionality that's, I don't think the emotionality of what's going on in our social body and our political body can be underestimated, and the amount of it, but also the power of it to get people to disregard facts. You can name all the facts you want. I mean, we've experienced this, you know, for however long now that the fountain of lies has been part of our public discourse. We know that just offering the truth and the facts is not persuasive, and that's because of the emotionality,
right.
the deep emotional need,
right?
For what? Maybe that's the teaser we need to.
Well, maybe that could be the part that it could be the big piece that we're missing. Yeah. You know, is that we've tried to confront Trump's Michigas with truth, with facts. People on his side aren't listening because they are necessary, but the bigger issue is fear. Yeah. You hit it. Yeah. And I mean, I have, you know, in previous lifetimes working as a firefighter paramedic, had many years and many experiences of watching people do things in fear that you can only scratch your head about afterwards and go, what in the name of all that is holy were they thinking? Well, they weren't. Fear was driving, and that's the piece. Again, not bowing before or in any way giving any room to hateful behavior or speech that instigates hate and further marginalizes and injures people. There's got to be a way to get to, you know, some of these people and change the nature of the conversation. That is what we're about here, is changing the nature of the conversation. And I think as we get closer and closer to the election, you know, one thing you learn early on, and you probably got this in clinical pastoral education, something ministers need to do in order to learn how to be pastors. And much of the time, it takes place in a hospital. And we are given these little name tags that say chaplain on them before we even know really what the hell a chaplain is. And then you spend 12 weeks trying to figure it out. One thing you learn very clearly in that setting is that a system under stress becomes exquisitely what it is. So, you know, if there's an underlying dynamic in the family system, put it under a little bit of pressure and you are going to, like, be able to read it and figure it out within about 8 seconds of walking in the room. And so thinking about our nation now and under the dire circumstances that we find ourselves, you know, under this existential threat of climate change and And I would say the existential threat of the possibility of another Trump presidency, even though I don't think there is a snowball's chance in hell that that's going to happen. And we'll get to that next show. I'll explain my math. These are fear encouraging, fear nurturing issues. And I think you hit it right on the head, and we can't really overstate, and we can't afford to respond to that.
That's a great spot to leave it. If you're good to leave it there, I'm good to leave it there. Be curious, Shayna.
Go deep, Chris.
And shine light.
This podcast is made possible by our generous donors who give to us at Patreon. You can be one of those generous donors. We would appreciate it if you would become one of those generous donors. We will continue to podcast for money. In fact, we'll probably continue to podcast without it too, but it makes it a lot easier to do the projects that we're seeking to expand into. If you have found value in this conversation this morning and you believe that the world would be a better place if this conversation was expanded some, then we ask you to help us do that by going to patreon.org.
Shayna, great to chew this over with you. I'm so appreciative. Thank you very much, and it's great to see you.
Thank you, Chris, as always, for the great questions.